Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
I want to be able to engage somebody in the real world rather than wear a suit and tie. I have my writing shirt on today. It's a 25-year-old shirt that's got pens all over it. And someone's going to go, well, that's a dorky shirt. And I go, right, what's your point? I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah. Right or right?
Right.
And you know what?
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the greatest podcast on the planet, Sell or Die, for your sales skills, for your personal development skills. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. Woof. And I wrote the Sales Manifesto. And
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome, Die Hard, to Sell or Die. We are glad you're here. We have an amazing episode today.
Yep.
Who's on, Jeffrey?
We have Diana Boer, and she is a friend of mine for 25 years, but she is also the premier communicator and teacher of writing skills on the planet, and she will challenge you, the diehard, that your emails suck, and then tell you how to make them better.
So here's the cool thing. She's the author of Communicate Like a Leader, Creating Personal Presence, and her latest book, Faster, Fewer, Better Emails, because did you know that 42% of people, this is a crazy stat, 42% of people who use emails as their primary business communication spend nearly 3 hours a day on them?
No, you spend 3 hours on a fucking subject line.
Are you one of those people?
Do you think I should put this on there? Do you think I should put that on there? Will this spam out?
Diana is here to help you stay out of your inbox and spend more time with your prospect. But before we get to Diana, we have a 5-star review.
Yes, brand new from the iTunes reviews. Cleveland Marty writes, as expected, great coaching, advice, inspiration from both Jen and Jeffrey. I always pick up something new and refer anyone and everyone looking for help in the personal, professional development space to Sell or Die. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, wow. I love
Cleveland
that.
Marty is hoping to get a championship this year with his football team. Because he ain't going to get it with his basketball team.
Oh, man.
And the baseball team, I think, is already in last place. But whatever it is, Cleveland, Marty, thank you.
The Phillies aren't too far behind them, though.
The Phillies are only 4.5 games out, and they just, even though they lost 8 in a row, they've just won 4 in a row. So let's back off the Phillies for just a moment.
We'll see.
Even though they tanked.
All right, it's time for Diana, a woman who's got to remind you that your inbox is not a to-do list. Take a listen.
There's a rumor that you have taken your business to a new level or a different level. It involves a spiral staircase and a bookcase.
Yes, I'm getting to work at home now. I sold my training company about 18 months ago. And so I'm back in my home office, just getting to write and coach people to get their message out with a book.
Well, you know, when Jeffrey introduced you, he mentioned that you've written 48 books. Whoa. And there's people out there who are dying to write a book and they can't even finish it because they haven't really started it.
They haven't written the first chapter yet.
So where does someone, I mean, we have a lot of diehards who I'm sure have great information and great things to say. Where do they even start?
Well, they start by thinking, where's the pain? Just like you do in sales. You think, you know, where's the pain? How am I going to help solve that? And hopefully, you know, they've got a service or a product that's going to do that. And it's the same with writing a book.
So do they have an expertise in a subject and that causes them to write it?
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's the way I've always done my books. An agent called or an editor called and said, you know, what's going on out there? Because they're not usually themselves out in the workplace.
And right. They're in their work office listening to other people and they think they know what's going on.
Right. Most of them are in New York City and they'll say, you know, if it hasn't happened here, it's not real.
Right.
And so occasionally they have to call out and find real people out there in the real world saying, what's really going on? What are people really talking about? What are they complaining about? What are they griping about? And we're the people out in the real world, you know, mixing it up. And so we come up with the, you know.
And so with all the social media out there, email is still the prime communication device, probably
right.
times 100.
Right. You know,
and
when we ask people.
You're there talking to people about concise emails. Define concise.
Well, it doesn't say more than it needs to about the topic. Some people just do a brain dump when they write. And it's once upon a time, almost like they were doing the essay in school or the story when they got up and did a book report. And they get to the bottom line in the last paragraph. And that's totally backwards because people just don't have time to read it.
But what may be thought of as too concise?
Well, you know, those that sound blunt. Somebody says, you know,
so
you're
if
going
you're like
to
me in from New York.
Dinner, and they come back with, no.
Yeah, that's a little concise.
But they could have been saying in their mind, no.
Right, but if they just add one other word or phrase, that changes the whole tone. Mm. And some people don't recognize the difference between being concise and being blunt.
Okay, so how do you recognize that for yourself?
Well, I think many times people don't, and that's the problem. They don't realize that they're really turning people off because they have such a blunt tone. I mean, that's their tone in the workforce. They're always just turning people off. But with their body language, they, you know, they have a smile, they, you know, tap somebody on the shoulder, and that playful tone makes a difference. They just don't have that when they write the email.
That's
they
true.
Don't realize they come across like that.
But you deal with New York people all the time. They're blunt.
They are. And it makes a difference. If you know them, begin because you're adding that. You know, if you know that person one-on-one and you're adding that I won't say baggage, but you're adding that knowledge, that background knowledge about them.
So there has to be a difference between blunt and how's your mama and them. And so, you know, I want to know, we deal with salespeople and diehards right now, they struggle with a subject line. They struggle with how to ask the right questions. I'm personally against using the 3-bullet point strategy of writing an email. I want it to be a sentence that I can read and respond to. And they're also wanting to have somebody click here and go to their funnel or go to their sale or go to their process. What are the fundamental things that you're recommending in this book that allows someone to have an email that might be slightly different than the other guy or the other woman that gets the prospect to read it and take action?
I think they need to actually think of their subject line that says the message. People prioritize their emails by the subject line. They're reading from their mobile phone most of the time. At least in our survey, it said 52% are doing their emails on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're deciding, read now, delete, read it later. And if you don't have something that pulls them in the subject line, then you've got a 50-50 shot of having them read it at all. But it should be mysterious. I mean, people don't have time to play guessing games. It should really be informative, but it should sound like it's going to help them do something. It's not a guessing game with your subject line. It should be helpful. It should be specific, and it should tell them what action you want them to take. Shouldn't be just hitting a link.
Should it be a question in the subject line or a declarative sentence?
Well, either. It could be, if you think headlines on a newspaper are meant to pull people in.
Right.
And you decide from that headline, should I read it now or do I want it, skip it? And people are used to having a point. I mean, you don't read headlines that say weather or Iran or bomb scare. You read headlines that give you the point. And if you like that, you read the article. If you don't, you skip it. And I think people should think of their headline on that sales email in the same way. If you want people to read it, be informative. Asking a question is great because, again, people are tempted to say, yes, I do think blah, 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 or no, they want to answer it. So either of those is good. Marketing emails frequently get a response with the question. That polls well.
If I was trying to get somebody to network with me, should the email say, meet me for coffee, or should it say, who are you meeting for coffee?
It would be better most of the time to say, meet me for coffee if you have a relationship with that person.
If you don't
have a relationship with that person, the question is generally better.
I know you did hundreds of hours of research when you were writing your new book, and I'm curious, like, what was the most startling thing you saw about our email habits? Not mine and Jeffrey's personally.
No, because ours are perfect.
Yeah.
I just want to
obviously,
know that.
Obviously, obviously. Right. Us not included. But no, but about email habits in general.
That people spend, 42% of the people we surveyed spend more than 3 hours a day on email. To me, that's startling because they can't get their core work done. They can't actually get out there and talk to people about an issue if they're spending time just babysitting their email.
Should they do emails in non-working hours?
I suggest that. And if they have key things to get done, that's the big rocks they should put into their day and then check it. Not leave it open. Another key thing we found is 52% of the people just leave their email open all day long. That's just what they do, is they check it. Now, if your job is, you know, you're working in customer service and that's your job is to maintain relationships, and you may have somebody in your office that's what they do. They watch your email and direct it to you if it's really important, and that's fine. But if you intend to build relationships with people, you've got to be talking to them. You're either out there meeting with them, you're seeing them face to face, not just watching what pops into your box.
Let me clarify the big rocks statement that Diana just made. It's an old Stephen Covey thing, and probably somebody 1,000 years before him. If you want to fill a jar up completely, you start out by putting the big rocks in first, then the pebbles, then the sand, and it's full up. But if you start out with sand, you'll never get the big rocks in there. And the big rocks are the most important part of your day. The making a sales call or getting in front of someone that can say yes to you, those are the big rocks of the day. And if you're spending 3 hours on the beach trying to do your emails, you ain't going to get to the big rocks.
Right. You're not going to get the proposal written.
Right.
I worked with somebody last week, and they had a huge deal on the table. I mean, a huge deal on the table. It was due the next morning at 9 o'clock, and that person was Wednesday saying, I got to get this proposal written. And I said, it's too late. They're asking me to help them write this proposal. And I said, you know, if this is a huge deal, it was like a 30-page proposal and they're wanting help on it the day before. That would have been a big rock that I would have advised them to start on 2 weeks ago so they had time to perfect it.
So tell us about your email habits. Like, what do you do personally so we can try and model our behaviors?
Yeah, we want to know.
Well, first of all, I think one of the key principles that I try to do is to make sure that I'm not using my inbox as a to-do list. It's not a collection of things to do. You got to clean it out. And every morning when I check my email, if it's something to do, I schedule it to be done. And then it gets out of my box so that I can see new things that pop in. And that's one of the things we found on the survey, is that a lot of people just leave. And when I do a speech on this, people raise their hand when I ask, how many of you have to-dos in your inbox right now? And hands go up everywhere. That's a bad habit. So I clean out my box.
But I'm the kind of person that puts it in there so I remember to do it.
Well, that's the problem. But see, that email in there, so you remember to do it, is you're always having to look past it and think. Now, if you've got it in there 3 days because you're going to remember sometime later, you go back and you think, now, what was the date? Now, when did I have to get back on that? What was I waiting on? I was waiting on some information. You have to pull it up and read to get, oh, close it. I have to wait till Monday to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Now, what was the detail? And you just have to keep stumbling over and opening up and reread to remember. If you open it up and think, oh, I need to do that on Monday because I have to wait to get such and such information, you make a note on your calendar Monday to relook at it and then file it. Then you come back to it and it's not continually cluttering up.
So what you're saying is only look at it once.
Yes. Look at it one time, schedule it, make a note to come back to it on your calendar and then put it away.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
Are there other common time wasters? Because I'm just amazed by this stat that 42% of people spend 3 hours a day on email. What are they doing in there?
Huh?
I think they're trying to look at everything that comes in rather than filter it. A lot of clutter comes from the bad use of reply all. You know, when people, let's say that the sales manager is getting ready to pass up the status report. Maybe they send something up to their marketing manager or their boss, a regional manager or something for the quarter. And he sends out a message and says, hey, team, look at this report. You got anything to add? You got the latest update on your accounts and reply back to me if you see anything that needs to be added, deleted, changed. And everybody responds with some meaningless comment like, looks fine, nothing to add, looks okay, looks
yeah.
great.
Thanks a lot for the info. And they hit it to everybody.
Yeah. And it's totally meaningless and it distracts everybody. I mean, it's not that it's a big deal to delete it, but if you have 17 of these replies coming to you, it's a waste of time and it's a distraction of that core project that you're trying to work on, that big proposal you're trying to get out. And then every 5 minutes, these responses pop into your box.
Do you think that it's because no one has ever taken a real writing course that they labor with it and struggle with it?
I think, but even in writing courses, I don't think people teach habits. I think that things like how to structure your email, I know we did, how to get rid of grammar errors, how to be clear, how to be concise. You teach principles of that. But many writing courses don't teach good practices for email. I mean, because basically it's a relatively new thing.
Do you recommend that people use software like Grammarly to be able to fix their grammar so they don't look like a freaking idiot?
Well, yes, they could. However, sometimes they don't understand. It's like a Band-Aid. You know, they don't know why that's an error. It highlights it, but they don't really understand the reason. So they correct that error. They correct that spelling. They correct that, you know, I shouldn't have the sentence like that. But it's not a permanent solution because they didn't really understand the problem. And then in some of those grammar checker software issues, packages, they don't. There are a few errors. I know passive voice and past tense is confused in one of the software packages. I can't remember what it is, but I know I've had people bring that and say, hey, this is not really correct, is it? It's not accurate. And it's not. I can't remember exactly which software package that error occurs. But you've got to not just use a Band-Aid approach. You really need to learn what the issue is or the rule is, or you're just going to keep making it and keep making it and keep making it.
Grammar defines a person for me when I get a piece of email and it says you're and it's the wrong you're, I delete it.
Yeah, when they, it's a big pet peeve for me when they do that or there instead of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when you talk to somebody on the street, it doesn't even have to be in writing and somebody says, well, he don't know no better because.
Exactly.
You think, well, this person is not that polished. They're not educated. And so it just draws a category for you.
It's a negative impression, that's for sure.
there's other things like when people use a ton of exclamation points or emojis. Like, how do you feel about emojis in business emails?
Well, in the book on writing that I did in 20 years ago, I said this has no place in professional writing and business writing. I still don't do it, but I see leadership teams do it. I see CEOs. I deal with one CEO right now who uses emojis. So I'm a little softer on that. I still don't recommend it. I don't use
it. How come?
Emails. Pardon me?
Why is it something you don't recommend?
I think first of all, it's a clarity issue. You know, you put a little emoji in there. In fact, somebody used one the other day and I said, I kept trying to enlarge my screen, trying to figure out what is that expression? Sometimes it's unclear. I mean, you get a smile, you get the one with tears. That's easy to understand.
Or the thumbs up.
Yeah. But some of them, you really think, are they being sarcastic with that face? Are they meaning it? Is this?
They're trying too hard to be original.
Yeah. I like using GIFs in emails. I feel like they really get people's attention and they can easily make you laugh with a quick like little video.
Yeah. So they can be unclear. There are benefits to it. It establishes a playful attitude. It lets the personality to come through. So those are the benefits. But the cons to it is that it can be unclear, that it can people can interpret it as being light and on a serious topic. And if they don't like it, again, that might increases the chance of creating a negative impression. So the jury's still out. I think it's fine for text message.
Yeah.
Email, I'm not sure.
Do you think people substitute text messages for what they should put in an email?
They substitute it when they can't think of the right word, I think, sometimes. Yeah. And they think, I can't think of the precise way to express how I feel about something. I'll just put an emoji in there.
Or I'll just put a GIF in there that pisses me off because I keep seeing it.
I don't know. Like, my feeling is if I piss off half the people or however many people by putting in a GIF in there, then they shouldn't be on my email list. Like, then they're the wrong people for me because that's my feeling. Like, that's who I am. I'm having fun. And if you don't get it or you don't like it, I'm not saying anything offensive, but if you don't like it, it's like you going to a public seminar and cursing. And someone hears you say a curse word in the middle of the seminar and they're like, oh, I'm so upset. And like, what's your response?
My response is I don't give a shit.
I mean, like, you feel bad that you've offended them,
right,
but then they shouldn't come to your next seminar.
Right.
And so I sort of feel the same way with GIFs and emojis, and I'm taking a GIF stance.
So you have to know your audience. What you're saying here is you have to know your audience.
And
you're conveying your audience, you're conveying your beliefs, your values, your personality.
And also, like, I'm not talking about life and death matters. Like, I'm not talking about like some very serious thing. I'm talking about like selling, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's equally as important that your audience knows you.
Right.
Like
right.
People who come to me, they're not coming because they want a namby-pamby message about how to be professional.
Exactly.
I'm friendly. I'm not professional. And right. I want to be able to engage somebody in the real world rather than wear a suit and tie. I have my writing shirt on today. It's a 25-year-old shirt that's got pens all over it. And someone's going to go, well, that's a dorky shirt. And I go, right, what's your point? I don't care. I don't care.
You know, right or right?
Right.
And you know what? This is really important. Discussion that, or I guess really a reflection that a writer should have about their opening and their closing as well. I think that should match the relationship and who you are. Stuck on a formal opening, a formal closing. I mean, you don't start off by saying something like, I'm going to see you in court and then sign it regards.
Right, exactly.
I met somebody who writes me who is absolutely the best in the way he starts an email. One time it'll be, hey, Diana, and then continue. Sometimes it's a formal Diana, comma. If you're being more formal, it's with Diana and less formal Diana and a dash. Uh-huh. Sometimes no opening, it's like we're continuing the conversation. And all of that has meaning, and most people don't pay any attention to it.
Sometimes in the second email, you don't even put your name in it. Like if you're in a dialogue with somebody, the first time you'll go Diana, maybe with a comma, and then after that, there's no salutation.
Right. The only exception to that is if you start copying several different people, it's a long thread.
Yeah, tough. Yeah.
And then you copy other people in it, and then you can't remember who are the speakers here, who said that back to who, and you get lost. So if there's a danger in that, it is good to use their name at the beginning. Then you can tell who said what to whom, and you've got 16 different interactions back and forth, and you start bringing other people into the discussion for their input. That is important. But I love the way Bill, when he writes to me, I love the way he starts, because he might say, you're right, Diana, yeah, that is the best thing to do in this situation, because it just pulls you right in. And if a salesperson has that going on with a conversation ongoing with the client, and they can continue that conversation and open it in such a way, it compels the person to respond back to them. Like,
let's informal yet professional. Informal yet professional.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Informal yet professional.
Yes, absolutely. And if they pull them back in to say, maybe the email just starts off by saying, last week when you said such and such, I do totally agree that Jack should not be at that conference. Well, immediately, if that's the opening sentence, you've reminded them where you were last week in that conversation. And it's just like there has not been a gap in the conversation. And it compels them to answer back.
I think you really have to know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not going to sign off to a prospect, XO, Jen. You know?
Right.
But if you sign up for my newsletter, I'm going to sign off that way.
XO?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I think it really depends on the context and who's emailed who first and that kind of thing.
Yes. And one other thing to keep in mind, when you have your openings and your closings, it's the content, your relationship, and the purpose.
Ooh.
That's going to be used for. Many people don't think about that. Sometimes you know the person really well, you know the audience, but that email is going to serve as a reference document to four or five other people later. It might even turn out to be going up three or four levels for approval or sign off. So you want maybe to be a little bit more formal because of the purpose that it's used for, or because it's going to be filed, or it's going to be sort of a reference document.
For
so people
sure.
just get that, not just relationship, not just topic, but also use.
When I'm talking to salespeople and I've written about it, I tell them it's not the close, it's the open
mm-hmm.
that matters, because that's the grabber. And if you don't have a grabber at the very beginning, you're never going to get to the close.
Right.
So I want, take my attention or connect with me emotionally in some way or intellectually in some way to where I'm engaged, and then there's a possibility you can get to the end. Otherwise, if I open an email and it says, let me introduce myself, and then there's three bullets in it, it's gone. it's gone.
So we've talked a lot about sending emails. I want to talk about the reverse, which is receiving emails, because I know we all struggle with having just way too much junk mail, way too many BS emails in our inbox. Do you have a method for getting rid of these emails or cleaning up the inbox?
Yes, there are a lot of strategies I go into in the book, but some of them are more, we'll get rid of more than the others. The obvious one, I know people think this is a dumb idea because it's so common sense, but just unsubscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know why people don't do it. Here's why people don't do it. They think, I'm overwhelmed. I've got 100 emails in my box. It's just quicker to delete, delete, delete. But that's just a temporary solution. It takes four or five clicks to unsubscribe, to roll down to the bottom, unsubscribe. And then you're going to get this pop-up that says, why are you unsubscribing? And then you're going to get another pop-up. and it takes four or five clicks. Get off of it. And people say, well, it's just quicker, just delete. I'm behind today. But if you keep on doing that, then, they've got somebody else is going to send you something else, and then they're going to pass your email on to somebody else. And it just keeps multiplying. It's like baby chicks.
Yeah, I unsubscribe in 2 seconds.
Yeah, I always unsubscribe too.
And so I do that, and then you're going to send fewer. A lot of people create their own problem. They create their own problem because they don't. They write what I call so what documents. And they send out an email with a message, but the action's not clear. The reader gets it and they think, so what? What are you asking me to do? The action is not clear. And so it takes four or five interactions. Let me give you an example of that. with scheduling things. They'll say, I need to meet with you. How does Friday look on your calendar? The person responds, oh, I can't do it Friday. I've got a doctor's appointment. I'll be out all afternoon. How does Thursday look for you? The other person comes back and says, oh, well, I can't do it Thursday. And in fact, I'm trying to get ready to go on vacation. Could you? And you've got four or five interactions for something very simple when they could have just said, here's a link to my calendar, schedule this, or give a specific date. If this, here's two choices for us to meet. If this doesn't work, please suggest a date and time for me, or to use a totally different software package for scheduling.
Do you believe that people should schedule? Do you believe in that? Schedule the appointment by your damn self?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Do I schedule it?
No. Do you believe in salespeople emailing a prospect and saying, schedule an appointment with me?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That I think that's part of the personal relationship.
I don't know. It seems impersonal to me. I don't know. I've never hit somebody's calendar. I've been asked to do it 500 times. I've never gone to somebody's calendar and scheduled my own damn appointment.
That's because you don't schedule appointments.
Oh, that's true.
But like for someone else who does manage their own calendar, it's much easier if the person gives you options versus guessing like, well, how about Thursday at 2 or Friday at 3?
I agree.
That's a waste of time to send 6 or 8. That's what I'm saying. You're creating your own clutter that goes back and forth when it's unnecessary. So when I'm scheduling, I'll say, if they've asked for a meeting, I'll say, all right, here are two times. If these don't work, please suggest a day and time. And that's still personal. And I'm not sending them to another calendar, but it cuts down on about 6 different variations. Yeah. Generally, they'll accept one of those two that I sent. And if they don't, they'll come back to me with a date and a specific time.
So I have two more questions.
Ooh.
I have two more questions for you. One of them is about writing. Are there specific tips that you give to when you're in a seminar and you're talking about writing to somebody? Are there specific tips that you give them that says, these are the three things you better do or I'm going to come out there and hit you over the head with my new book?
Absolutely. I don't teach writing seminars anymore. We sold our training company to Communispond, mm-hmm. and they handle our training of writing programs. But yes, we used to. And when I speak on the topic, when I do keynotes, yes, we give very specific tips about how to structure the email. Here's the format. If you use this format, it has four parts to it. You will write a quicker email. You'll cut your time in about 50%. We've done studies on that through the years.
Can you give us that format?
Really quickly, yes.
Okay.
It's called the MADE format, MADE. You'll have it made for 90% of everything that you write if you structure message, action, details, and evidence. And it's a very simple format. I've discussed it in this book. I've discussed it in a couple of other books, MADE, message, action. And the action represents any kind of recommendation you're making. If you're recommending a product or service, this is what I say will help you solve this problem. Or follow-up action. It goes there. It's the second sentence or second paragraph. You're writing a proposal. It would be the whole second section of your proposal. And then details to take the action, generally how and why. And then any attachment, optional evidence. If you have an attachment, like a spreadsheet or a copy of a clause you're sending or an invoice you want them to look at to see if it's correct, whatever it is, a map of your layout of your facility, if they're taking a tour of your plant, whatever it is, you refer to that attachment at the end.
So that was amazing. Diana is fantastic, and
she's practical.
She's smart.
And if you're looking at communicating by writing, she's the woman who will take you to the next level. Go out and get her books. She's got courses. Go get those. Anything she says, like I said at the beginning, I've known her for 25 years. She's respected by every single member of the National Speakers Association, of which there are 4,000 members.
Wow. So one thing she brought up, and I thought this was really interesting, was that to help clean up your emails, you should send texts instead of emails. And I want to talk about that.
You emoji babe, you.
Oh, yeah. So if you're going to send a text, then you need their cell phone number.
That's true. And when you get their cell phone number, you better not abuse it.
That's right. Like, don't be like, just following up. 2 days later, hey, I didn't hear back from you. I'm texting you again.
Right. Don't send a dumbass text.
Yeah. No,
send valuable messages and send helpful messages and send positive messages and you'll get a text back. This morning I texted one of our biggest customers. Jen saw something positive on the street. I don't want to go into it. She texted it to me.
I said it was a sign from the universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I texted the CEO of the company, and 5 seconds later, I got 2 smile emojis back. And that what that tells you is, number one, he's paying attention to his phone primarily. He wouldn't have done that on an email.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I feel valued enough to be able to be responded to, and I have a cell phone.
Right, but here's the key. So just like your email inbox should not become a to-do list, please do not create a text message to-do list, because you'll be so lost in the sea of text messages between friends and family and people that you're just shitting around with, that if you keep your customer stuff in there as a to-do list, it's gonna get lost. So if someone asks you something on text, like I'll give you an example, our insurance agent, Michael, I text him probably when he would probably prefer an email, but he never complains. And so I texted him, you know, like a question about insurance, and he goes, check your email, at like within seconds, right? And within 5 seconds, I had a response on email with all the information I needed. And so if you cannot respond right away, that's fine, but make sure you pull it out and then respond to them in the form of communication that's going to help them the most. Like what he sent me, he could not have texted me.
What Jen is talking about and what Diana has been talking about is speed of response counts.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Now. And I don't get email notifications, but all the people who I need to communicate with from a customer's perspective, they have my cell phone. And they know that when they text me, I'm going to respond back day or night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do it in 2 seconds if I possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
So the challenge for you diehards, and this is a big one. Number one, you have to become a better correspondent. Number two, you have to become a faster correspondent. And number three, you have to know the rules of correspondence.
Yeah. Don't delay your response to the time length where you literally feel like you have face over hand, palm over hand emoji.
Right, and you're not communicating with your mom or your sister or your Uncle Joe. You're communicating with people that give you money. Your grammar has to be right. Your spelling has to be right. Your syntax has to be right. All the elements that Diana is an expert at.
Mm-hmm.
She can help you take it to the next level. I feel like I'm trying to sell her, but study what she's written. I have. But I already was pretty good at grammar before I started. What she did is reinforce the fact of how important it is in today's world. You cannot overlook the fact that if you do the word there incorrectly, I'm deleting your fucking email because you're a moron.
Oh, yeah. All right. So there's another thing that was a little bit controversial for me in this episode, which was Diana was talking about emojis, and she is like not, you know, plaid on this subject.
Babe.
She is black and white on this. She is totally against emojis and emails. Now, not only do I love emojis and emails because I think that brings character and life, and I have personally like a fun, energetic brand, and I want that to come through on paper, but I love GIFs or GIFs, however you say that damn word. Okay, the things with the moving people and people jumping up and down.
I don't like the one the cat on her back doing her paw. I try to delete them. I'll look at them and go, oh, that's cute. And then how do I delete this again?
Yeah, but okay, so they're not your you're not their target market. The people, like, here's
Jen,
how I feel about them.
You're my target market. You've been my target market for years.
Well, you've already sealed the deal on that one. So without an emoji. But here's the deal, okay? If your branding is boring, if you're like in a boring industry, and I'm sorry to say this, but there are industries that are considered boring,
in the funeral industry, and there's an emoji, a GIF you can get, where the guy like comes out of the coffin
joke about that one.
But listen, the bottom line is you can't go over the line with these things, and I think oftentimes they are. I think the thing that goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to get a ball in a hole or to get somebody jumping up and down, I think they're fucking dumb. But some people are okay with it. If you're dealing with an immature audience, that's perfect for you.
I don't think that the audience has to be immature. I think the audience has to be engaged and want that. So if, for example, you're signed up on my email list and you get an email from me and you don't like my smiley face in the email or my high five or whatever, you can unsubscribe. It's that easy. And I don't want you on my list. Okay? That's totally fine with me. I want people. People who are going to relate to me and how I speak and
then
the
give me
energy
information
I
can take out into the street and turn into money.
I do. But I think it gets separated better and it's more easy to read. Just like you put cartoons in your book. Just like your book is easily laid out and easy to read. I think we need to be looking at our emails in a way that makes the reader want to read them. And when the reader gets an email that's 16 million, you know, lines of text with no breaks and whatever, no one wants to read that shit. Okay? They want things
shorten
that look
your emails
nicely formatted and have, you know, something that's
an
eye-catching
emoji in there. Yeah, listen,
I'm going to argue emoji till my death. I believe in them. I love them and I use them.
No problem.
You know, I think we need to get Jeffrey to learn how to use emojis better.
I use emojis.
Gifts.
I use them.
He would love gifts.
Yeah, you
emails.
Would love gifts.
I use them
is
with my 10-year-old
gifts?
Daughter.
It's not like the peanut butter, right?
No, well, it depends on who you talk to. No one's ever really got the right answer.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll go with gifts for now because they sound like a gift. Which
why don't we just
pleasant.
Have an extra crunchy GIF?
Oh, boy. All right. I think we've hammered home this topic. So.
Bingo. And diehards, let me tell you something. The reason we've hammered on this is to stress the importance of your writing, your grammar, and your messaging. And I think that I cannot stress it enough. As a person, I have built a career based on writing and the acceptance of my writing. And I'm challenging you right now, stop screwing your time away watching something stupid and start concentrating on taking more grammar lessons and more writing lessons, and you will win more money. Time to go, Jen.
All right. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow waving goodbye with my emoji.
Oh, and it's going back and forth. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm challenging you to get out there and make a sale, even if your GIF falls off.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.